it means it's time for the Media Beat with David Tarachuk. David, of course, is a PBS television correspondent reporting on ethics and belief. He has his own website, themediabeat.us. But we are fortunate enough to have David live on Friday mornings here on Robinhood Radio. We rebroadcast on the weekend and also on Monday during our noontime news hour as well. So we'll welcome once again. I called him on Skype. I wasn't meant to do that, but I did that this morning. Hi, David.
Well, we've connected anyway. Yes, I'm reporting into you. Happy to do so from the media capital of the world, New York City. Until very recently, well, maybe it still is, the epicenter of the coronavirus crisis. We are probably still the epicenter, I'm afraid, although other hotspots do now seem to be overtaking us. At least the other numbers, apart from the bald totals, like deaths and hospital admissions for COVID-19, are actually going down now in our area. I don't know how that compares with the northwest corner of Connecticut, but there's the beginnings in this city of some sense of maybe we're over the worst, for now at least. Well, there may be a second wave. Everyone seems to be talking about the risks of that. But for now, New York may seem over the worst.
It's the same up here. And the thing that worries me is the greatest advantage we have to keep it at bay is the social distancing rule and the mask rule. And a lot of people now that we have passed that curve and we're on the other side are thinking that these things aren't really useful, but quite to the contrary, it'll keep the curve down. It'll keep it down if everybody in public, when you're around people, just pops up that mask on their nose and their mouth, and if you try to stay 6 feet away from people. I mean, that is the thing that brought the curve down to begin with.
Yeah, but we know human nature is what it is, and when things seem to be easing, people tend to take it easier. It's one of the most, frustrating elements of medical practice is that so often people stop taking the course of drugs that they've been prescribed for whatever's wrong with them the moment that they start to feel better, where obviously common sense would tell you, well, if it's working, keep on doing it until, of course, it's no longer necessary. But we make that judgment in our heads about when it's necessary. And our heads sort of tell us that, I'm feeling better. Perhaps I don't need it. In this way, the society in general seems to be saying to itself, or is tempted to say anyway, in part, well, if it's getting better, then I don't need to be so careful. And of course, we have an enormous set of pressures from business, from those parts of our government that support business, and I'm exactly who I'm talking about, will be stressing the economic element in the equation and say, well, we've got to get America back to work. And that means, of course, people going out, people moving around, people doing the things they do when they're engaged economically. And, of course, and inevitably, there is a risk of us having a second wave or more.
Well, it is the coronavirus, and folks, it'll be with us for quite a while. So just get, if you finally learned how to spell it good, you'll be able to write it down quite a lot. It's gotten so political, though, David, before I get to our next topic, is that I actually have people who friend me on Facebook, okay? And when I check them, I see that they know other people that I know, and I know that they're real people, and I approve them. Well, I had four people in a row this week only friend me to call me a snowflake because of my stance on a liberal snowflake and some other things. I think I was also called.
That's exactly what you must sound like to many people, a liberal snowflake. Yes, it's an extraordinary term of abuse.
I know, and one of them even called me a libtard, which I found, that's the only one I really found highly offensive. But I immediately deleted them. But that's the whole problem with everybody in America right now, is everything becomes political, everything becomes red versus blue. and it's no longer based on medical reasoning. That's
if only it was simply red versus blue. It's now vicious polarities of those mainstream notions. It's a case of extremities versus each other, and no such thing anymore as civilized discourse between two disagreeing parties.
Yeah, it's amazing. Well, I want to go on to the 10,000-pound gorilla in the room, and that, first of all, would be Hong Kong. Now, I talk about this all the time, years and years and years ago when this was happening.
Possibly the biggest story in the world, It's the world's second largest economy starting to flex its muscles in a way that many people expected that it would. And Hong Kong is emblematic of a growing power. And at a time, at an interesting time, when the first power in the world, the world's largest economy, has quite self-consciously and deliberately taken a back seat in its position within the world, deciding that it doesn't want to be engaged, especially in asserting itself in a way that I don't mean to be deliberately sarcastic, but in a way that did make America great in the past. America was very conscious of its importance as a world power, and you cannot say that now. And every other country in the world looking at us now is astonished at our ability to just step back and do nothing in the face of things happening around the world, not least the coronavirus crisis, in which we could have taken the lead, and all that's happened is that we've ended up taking the lead as victims and ended up with the worst numbers than even China. And relatively speaking, and that projects the position of China itself in the world, coronavirus or not, at a time when America is providing no counterbalance to them.
And I always knew that China, even way back when it first started, was never going to wait to the date that it had to be. But do you think that because the way the United States has withdrawn and the way our foreign policy is, it opened the door for China to make the move to make Hong Kong their own quicker?
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Sure. The Chinese are very canny diplomats as well as bullies. Like lots of countries. I mean, if they have the capacity to bully, they will. But they've also kept a wary eye on what America wants and what possibility there might be of American resistance to them basically tearing up the agreement on Hong Kong, which is what they're about to do, by enforcing security legislation on Hong Kong that would effectively destroy the idea that was agreed in 1997 between China and Britain when Britain abandoned Hong Kong. The agreement, of course, was that there would be in the future, until the 2040s anyway, one nation, two systems. One system in mainland China and another system in Hong Kong. The system pretty much in the framework that Britain left it. But, with individual liberties guaranteed and the rest of it, that enabled the city-state to remain something of a democracy. And of course, that's what's at stake. A very, very big, important step on the way for China to have complete domination and ending up with one country, one system in both places, both the mainland and Hong Kong. And it was the expectation that China could confidently have that America would do nothing to stop them if they at this current point in time, if they decided to take full action on tearing up that agreement, and that's I think what we're seeing right now.
And I think what goes along with that is that on the basis other countries look at the United States as not being involved. But also, we're so uneven on what we do, you can't really tell what the president will have the country do at any given time, because he really does change his mind. So that's the added thing on top of us withdrawing and letting China take the lead. You also don't know exactly what the United States is capable of anymore if you're a foreign power.
Sure. I mean, we look other countries look at us and see President Trump doing, you know, vacillating between being pally and extraordinarily loving. Those are terms that he's at times used with the president of China, Chairman Xi, and between that and blustering. Blustering complaints about China and threats and indeed, you know, a trade war earlier this year. excuse me. is it any wonder that other countries simply scratch their heads and that the Chinese themselves say, "Oh, okay, well, we can get away with anything we want now."
Well, it's an interesting if you're a political observer and a political scientist, and like to look at politics on a calm and even manner, it's a very interesting story to follow to see what happens from here on in, because Hong Kong is the economic power that drives China's economy.
Yeah, it's no surprise that they want to have their hands on the levers of that economic power themselves, fully and entirely. Political power has been limited because they value the freestanding economic role that Hong Kong has played in the world economy. But that's not going to stop them. That sense of value is not going to stop them exerting their full state power over Hong Kong now that the opportunity exists for them to do it and get away with it.
All right. Jill has pointed out something to me. There's a Politico is doing a London playbook thing, a scoop, and they're talking about this, that, and the other thing. And it's really, and Jill calls it right, an opinion journalist. And they do this hourly, and they try to rationalize. And you know, this is what's wrong with our mainstream media on TV. And you hate to see this become this way with the print media, even though it's on the internet. It's still print media.
Well, opinion journalist is a phrase guaranteed to make me scream. Journalists can have opinions, of course they do, but opinion journalist is a peculiar kind of conflation, and sort of sets up a fuzziness that I don't want to see, and I regret that it's, you know, the reality, whatever label you put on it, the reality is that journalism from a particular standpoint, a partisan standpoint, very often is exactly what you would see, because I'm afraid I'm one of those die-hard dinosaurs who still sees value in the notion of journalists being objective and as neutral as they can be when it comes to reporting. That's not to say there should not be opinion in journalistic outlets. Of course there should, but it should be clearly labeled that as opinion. And if you want to be absolutely clear about it, you don't call the people who offer opinion journalists necessarily, although they appear in journalistic settings. It's a lot neater and a lot clearer. It's a stronger tradition, which I think we should try our best to hold on to. That opinion is not a journalistic function, although, you know, it's a publishing function, of course, in a newspaper and on a TV program. Even hard-nosed and, you know, steadily reportorial programs like 60 Minutes would set aside, and indeed many, many national news bulletins. The half-hour news on national network news in America in the 50s and 60s would allocate a certain number of minutes to an opinion, and often on 60 Minutes it would be very a very quirky 4 or 5 minutes, but they're separate. and in newspapers. Of course, the tradition is that that there's a whole page of opinion, or it's it's given rise to a word that in the trade and in the public mind that people generally accept, but don't often know the reason for it. The phrase being op-ed. Op-ed just means the page opposite the editorial. And that's the page on which opinion is given free rein. I'm sounding like, I know, like a complete dinosaur here, but those separations are there for a reason. And when you start to murky the waters and invent the phrase opinion journalist, you're well down the slippery path. Opinion writer is fine. Opinion journalist starts to confuse matters. I'm for the purity of reporting on the one hand and opinion expression on the other, very much the other, the one and the other, quite separate.
And the term opinion journalist really is a slam and really opens the door for other people to attack journalists. It really does.
Yeah. It murkies the water and it's dangerous for real journalists. I mean, of course, is reporting journalists, right? And I often think that it's being murkied in the other direction too. There are opinion writers who want to claim and say so very clearly sometimes that their opinion columns or opinion pieces in whatever medium are reported. So they've invented their word for it too, sort of a reported opinion piece. It's all getting a little too fudgy to me, a little too fudgy. The more we can hold to the line that there is something very different about opinion from factual reporting, the better we're going to be, I believe.
All right, let's go on to the ugly face of racism, which has really reared its ugly head, even though it's been around all along. I'm old enough to remember the race riots that burned in Los Angeles and Hartford and other cities. It seems like a different century ago, but here we go again. Just that one social media picture of the officer with the knee choking and eventually killing a person has just lit the fuse in Minneapolis, Minnesota. And this is where you need strong presidential leadership, not somebody who tweets out that if the looting starts, the shooting will start. You need some sort of strong leadership to lead this country now out of a path that, we've been through this before, and we're going to go through it again, David, 25 to 50 years after we went through it once already?
Well, yes, and at a time when we have a prime minister, what constitution am I talking about? When we have a president prepared to encourage loudly, in capital letters on Twitter, that they should be encouraging police violence at a time like this is just such a dismal notion. But it's happening, and it's happening in response to, yes, a totally enduring problem that simply will not go away unless, of course, we turn this nation around on this issue. Police relations with minority communities are once again at their worst, and cities are, in this case, one particular city is burning once again. And a police precinct was burnt down with hundreds, maybe a thousand or more people standing by watching. And of course, no police action or not even fire brigade action taken as that police precinct burned. People are very, very angry. And the initial spark for this, the death on camera, on social media, displayed on social media of George Floyd is just the most horrific occasion for, of course, public reaction, which is extreme. And why wouldn't it be? Even at a time where social distancing is the rule, we're getting street riots again. The last thing you think we would be having at a time as serious as this on the health front. But of course, this really very real grievance tops everything. I was going to say the word Trump, but of course that's wrong, entirely out of place in this context. Everything else that's going on, coronavirus and lockdown, goes by the board for a community which quite rightly feels that they are totally, totally ignored when it comes to individual civil rights and the right to life extinguished in this particular pace, and with apparent complete impunity for the moment, for the time in which it was happening. It is clear that the police officer keeping his knee on George Floyd's throat is completely resistant to any notion that he has a responsibility for the suspect in his charge, and that he's there's a horrible casualness to the way that he keeps his knee pressed on the man's throat with his own hands in his pockets, and immovably ignoring all the calls from people around him to go, you know, to let the man up and simply put him in the car, which might be a safer way to keep him contained, but wasn't something that I guess in his own terms he wanted to risk. But more importantly, he seemed so completely complacent about what he was doing that that has an entire horror of its own.
And here's the thing that makes it, there's two things in that picture that horrified me more than anything. One, what the hell is the cop who's taking the picture with his camera on his chest? Why isn't he interfering? And two, if you look at the guy with the knee on the neck, he's got a hand in his pocket. It's just one of the most disgusting. And you know what, folks? I'm not saying that people should riot because of this, but what if you're a black person in this country? What else can you do to wake up white America to that? Folks, racism has not gone away.
Yeah, racism as a whole is not going away. And with the notion that we're living in a post-racial society is a fabulous notion, and being exposed to such again and again. we've had other cases just in recent few weeks. But there is nothing so striking as a killing. Police, racism in general is one thing. Police brutality on unarmed black people of color is the raw reality and captured on that video, which made its way into social media and has occasioned everything that has flowed from it in Minneapolis. And of course, riots are never to be encouraged. However, they are to be appreciated, and they are to be taken seriously. And there are ways of reassuring a community that what has aggrieved them will be addressed properly and fairly and justly. And if we can see that, then maybe we'll get some calming down. But for the moment, we have a president fanning the flames. So it's not going to happen.
And the final comment, I guess you can look at this is, what this one picture and this action, unfortunately, we've seen three or four of them in the past 6 months, but what this action does is to take every other police officer in this country who doesn't do that, who does act professionally, it puts this horrible target on their back for people to not trust police officers.
Sure, and that's been the pattern in previous events too. We, in response to terrible pieces of police brutality. We've seen attacks on individual police officers, totally unjustified, but they happen. And I don't want to, you know, go in for the prediction game, but I wouldn't be surprised if if occasions and instances of that start to happen again. It's more measure, I believe. Each one of these incidents is another measure of a society's crack up, it's desperately serious, and yet, you know, it appears at the very top ranks of our government not to be taken that seriously at the moment. They're much more interested in trying to implement something that the new presidential directive calls preventing online censorship. Well, we know what we think about that.
That's it. Well, on that sad note, we'll wrap it up, David. Of course, David joins us every Friday morning. David, have a great weekend. We'll speak to you next week.
I look forward to talking to you. Bye-bye now.
David Tarachuk with the Media Beat here on Robin Hood Radio. And, of course, you can find the Media Beat at robinhoodradio.com. Click on demand. Click on David Tarachuk, the Media Beat.